Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Oh, wait. No, that was yesterday's show. That's when we talked about the TV series Parks and Recreation. No. Cut this music off. Thank you. Today we're talking to some actors, as in take action, in the real world of Parks and Recreation, not the TV series. Adrian Benepy, as many of you know, is New York City's Parks Department Commissioner under Mayor Bloomberg, and he's now Senior Vice President and Director of City Park Development at the Trust for Public Land. And they've just come out with an interesting big report on conservancies, those private nonprofits set up to administer and fundraise for selected public parks. And with him are two New Yorkers who have played big roles in those organizations. Tupper Thomas, now Executive Director of New Yorkers for Parks and the founding president of the Prospect Park Alliance, and Joan Byron, Director of Policy at the Pratt Center for Community Development and the former chair of the Bronx River Alliance. So welcome back, Adrian Benepy and Joan Byron, and welcome, Tupper Thomas.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning.
Adrian Benepy, New York City pretty much invented this concept with the Central Park Conservancy, born out of the budget crisis of the 1970s. That's the origin?
Yes, it is. So going back to 1980, when Central Park and a lot of the parks were in a really poor state of repair, citizens got together. A woman named Betsy Barlow was appointed by Gordon Davis and Mayor Koch to try to put something together, a kind of holistic approach to Central Park, which was kind of falling apart. And she got together with some philanthropists and created the Central Park Conservancy, trying to apply the model that you have at symphony orchestras, at universities, at museums, to public parks.
And now, because we see this report as a national angle, you're looking at conservancies all over the country. This model apparently has been adopted nationwide.
Yeah, so you could say that the Central Park Conservancy begat the Riverside Park Fund and the Prospect Park Alliance in some ways, and then those spread across the country rather rapidly. The Trust for Public Land Center for City Park Excellence has spent 18 months doing a study of conservancies. And one of the things we found is that 50% of the large cities in America have at least one conservancy at one of their major parks.
And so going through the local history a little bit, Tupper Thomas, that organization, Central Park Conservancy, was the guide for the Prospect Park Alliance that you got involved with. Did you talk to Betsy Barlow Rogers, who he referenced once upon a time, for guidance?
Of course I did, and it was very exciting. It's certainly different to do it in Brooklyn in 1981, 2, 3.
Was it that early that the Prospect Park Alliance began?
The Alliance began in 87. I started in 80. Gordon Davis appointed me just to be the administrator. I think the big difference in New York is that it's been very heavily supported, the conservancy movement, by the city of New York, which makes a big difference because you get to work together with the city. There's no suspicion. There's the trust that builds up, which is what is pointed out in this study. But the Central Park Conservancy was absolutely the mother of us all, very important.
So a lot of listeners are already thinking, oh, yeah, Central Park, Prospect Park, this is where all the rich people live, so they can create these conservancies and set themselves apart from the rest of the city. So Joan Byron, how does a group like the Bronx River Alliance, which represents parks not surrounded by millionaires concerned about their property values, function differently from, say, the Central Park Conservancy?
You know, the Bronx River Alliance was really born out of the coalescence of environmental justice organizations in the communities along the river who were, on the one side, just besieged with one environmentally burdensome project after another, sewage treatment plant expansion, sewage sludge pelletization, and so forth. So these groups, which were The Point in Hunts Point, Youth Ministries for Peace and Justice, Sustainable South Bronx, were already working on kind of not bearing more than their share of the city's environmental burdens, and came to the idea of also claiming their share of environmental goods. And that was catalyzed by a woman named Jenny Hoffner, who worked for Partnership for Parks at the time, who was an outreach coordinator with a capital O, capital C, who found these organizations, seeded them with small grants, they came together first as an informal working group and were able to accomplish a huge amount by flying under the radar, and then incorporated in 2001 as the Bronx River Alliance.
And the Bronx, I've talked about this before in the show, the Bronx has such great parks that people in the other parts of the city don't know about. I have gotten lost on my bicycle following the maze of bike trails in and out of some of the Bronx parks. There's such great parks in the Bronx, but poor communities are around them, and they don't have the money that Central Park and Prospect Park do.
Sure. And also, all that big landmass colored green mostly is north of the Cross Bronx Expressway, and south of the expressway, not so much. So what the Bronx River Alliance is doing is creating new parkland where it never existed before, creating out of strategic acquisitions of private land, of reprogramming of city-owned land, a linear park that will include eventually a continuous 8-mile greenway along the river.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We're in New York and New Jersey Public Radio. And listeners, are you involved with your local Parks Alliance or Parks Conservancy? Does it work well? Do you want to get some advice for setting one up for a neglected park in your neighborhood? That's part of what this manual that the Trust for Public Land has released. 212-433-WNYC. You have the experts at your disposal. Ask away. 212-433-9692. And Adrian Benepe, is this the first sort of best practices manual to come out for Parks Alliances and Conservancies?
It is. The Trust for Public Land works in cities across the country trying to help create parks. But we thought that, you know, one way to do that is for government to do it. And when governments are feeling affinity for parks and have a lot of money, that's great. But when they don't, citizens need to step in. And this is like a primer. It has some basic rules. You know, one of the rules is it really has to be a two-way street. As Tupper mentioned, the Alliance and the Conservancy and all the others worked because the city of New York was willing to be innovative and have private citizens play a role in public parks. Yeah, that was important. We think that it is important to have some kind of a legal agreement. There has to be, you know, the group has to commit to raising funds, even if a lot of those funds come from extra-governmental or governmental sources. So there are a number of things that we point to, both the advantages and also the pitfalls, that you can take something on and then have it fall in its face.
How about pitfalls? Since you took a national look, is there a cautionary tale about one that failed, perhaps, or failed in a particular way?
Well, I think the cautionary tale is being overly optimistic, particularly when government simply dumps the responsibility on a nonprofit organization and says, here you go, have at it, but we don't have any money. The government really has to be at the table. At the very least, they have to keep funding the way they always had. And really, the nice thing about, say, the Bronx River Alliance, even if they don't have a lot of wealthy people living directly across the street, they have access to wealthy people living elsewhere. They're also able to get an extraordinary amount of public funding through local elected officials. They got $200 million allocated for parkland and parkland creation acquisition along the length of the Bronx River, possibly more than has been spent publicly on Central Park.
Huh. So, Joan, how do you get wealthier individuals who don't actually live near the Bronx River Alliance interested parks to donate money?
It's a challenge because obviously when we go after those individuals, they're the same pool that's targeted by the wealthier parks that they may experience on a daily basis. What the Bronx River has is something special. It is New York's only freshwater river. We get 1,500 people a year out on that river in canoes. We are working to ecologically restore the river by shutting down the combined sewer overflows. So people have the opportunity to build something unique and to engage with really the ecological revitalization of a really badly neglected part of the city.
And Tupper, how do you deal with the tension that exists between groups like yours, because it's, you know, raising private money with the members' own agenda, supporting what are actually public resources?
I've never really seen a huge conflict in that situation. The working together, because government is always so closely connected with the conservancies, almost always in New York at least, the commissioner serves on the board. There's always a connection between the two of them. So there's never been the situation that one would fear which would be that the not-for-profit group with wealthy individuals would have to start doing just what wealthy individuals wanted. But I have not actually seen that happen. Now that I'm working with New Yorkers for Parks, we don't see that any place in New York at this time.
Faye in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello, Faye.
Hi, good morning. Faye, I'm a volunteer for Springfield Park, and I have sat on the panel for Partnership for Parks. And I would like to know, how can we in the Queens or Southeast Queens, you know, form an alliance like how they have it in Prospect Park?
Adrian Vanapi.
I think it's a great idea. What you have in Southeast Queens is a series of some very impressive parks. There's Springfield Park and a number of other parks. I think what you can do there is find strength in numbers. Get three or four or five parks together. Each one of them has a neighborhood constituency, and work with Partnerships for Parks, and then maybe form an alliance, as was formed with the Bronx River Alliance, where you get strength in numbers.
Sounds good. Okay. Right now we have Brookville Park, Springfield Park, and Mentone Park, and they're beautiful parks in Southeast Queens, but they have fallen ruins, and we have been able as volunteers and have to revitalize it, and it's just beautiful, and we're near Kennedy Airport, where we a lot of expansion is going on, and we hope that, you know, the park can be an asset to our community.
And I think you're going to get
some. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Can keep listening for a minute, Faye, because I think Tupper Thomas from the Prospect Park Alliance wants to give you a little advice too, right?
Right. I think really from New Yorkers for Parks, which is where I'm working now, because one of the reasons that this problem exists is that there is not enough money in the city of New York giving to parks. And so the real issue here is that we all have to work together to make sure that the Parks Department budget gets back up to what it should be so that all parks can have the basics. Then when you form a conservancy or an alliance, you're doing augment kinds of dollars versus supplementing what really should be paid by the taxpayer.
Are you saying that the quality work of the alliances and the conservancies shouldn't distract attention from the fact that public funds are needed for parks? Because, you know, one of the big controversies, and Adrian Benpe, when he's park commissioner, found himself in the middle of this, and there are people who criticize this whole realm, making the case that taxes are how we're supposed to fund public services, not private donations with strings and access attached.
Yeah, I mean, actually, that government should be taking its responsibility. This all came out of government not being responsible for managing their parks. The Prospect Park Alliance wouldn't have had to form if Prospect Park were in great shape and it was beautiful. It's a much lower income, certainly, than the Central Park Conservancy has. And all of these other parks, we really have to keep looking at where is the responsibility for the basics. I do think there's a real role for the not-for-profit as well, because you can do augment dollars, you can provide more programming that maybe the taxpayer wants to pay for. But the reality is that all of us should be working together to talk to our council members and the mayor about increasing the budget.
Inga on City Island. You're on WNYC. Hello, Inga.
Hi. First of all, I want to say that we have Pelham Bay Park here in the area, and that's the largest park in New York City.
Right. That's the Northeast Bronx, for people who don't know.
That's right. Northeast Bronx, right.
Uh-huh.
And
Orchard Beach. You can go to the beach. I've done it. You can go to the beach in the Bronx.
Here. And also people in the neighborhood, politicians and so on, are trying. Elizabeth Crowley apparently has, it's concerning Hart's Island, which is currently under the jurisdiction of the Criminal Justice Department. We are trying to get it out from there because nobody can access it. And we want to get it into parks. Parks doesn't want it because they don't have the budget.
I think we're off the topic of conservancies here, though.
No. The question was, is it possible to make a conservancy out of it? Or to put it under a conservancy?
Hart Island, Hart Island in particular?
Yeah.
I see. Well, I don't know if your neighbors to the north in the Bronx, Joan,
have put this
on your radar screen.
I think Hart Island is a perfect example of something that is too complicated, too difficult for the Parks Department to want to absorb, given that it isn't automatically going to get the resources to deal with all those complications. So this is, you know, on the Bronx River, community organizations stepped up and created parkland out of nothing and were able to, you know, take land that was eventually going to become a park and start staging events on it and start activating it and having things happen, starting to clean it up with their own resources. Obviously, you can't just do that with Hart Island, but the kind of direct action that community members can take can eventually catalyze bigger resources and public action.
Somebody else calling to offer some tips for conservancies based on an experience in Westchester, I think. Steve in Hastings-on-Hudson. Hi, Steve.
How are you doing, Brian? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
My compliments to the Bronx Forever Alliance. You have been my inspiration for what we've done on the Sawmill River in towns of Yonkers, Hastings, and Dobbs Ferry. And what we're doing, we're trying to bring the river together with the Putnam Trail, which was the old railroad which ran from the Bronx all the way to Brewster. Those trails were turned into walking trails, but we're making them into more of a trail that's used now in this time of year for snowshoeing and cross-country skiing. But we cut vines. The biggest enemy to our area are the porcelainberry vines, which we cut from the trees. They actually destroy the trees. So we've had volunteers come to help us out doing that. Now, this is the Groundwork Hudson Valley and the Sawmill River Coalition working together, all volunteers doing this program. And, again, I want to compliment the Bronx River Alliance. They've been my inspiration because I'm trying to put canoeing and kayaking on the Sawmill River, which has not been done before, and people are listening to me now, and we are ready to do it right now, and great, we have been doing
great,
it.
Great story, and such a great and expanding system of rails to trails parks in Westchester and north of there.
And thank you for your kind words. I think your example of what people can do with sweat equity, whether that's removing invasives, cleaning up areas, activating them with new kinds of programming, is a great example of what people can step up and do. I want to take the conversation back to what government needs to do, because ideally that kind of work on the ground, that grassroots work, opens the eyes of public officials and makes them see, no, these, you know, parks are a public resource. They need to be supported with public tax dollars. What people can do with their own resources is brilliant and inspirational, but it's tiny compared with what needs to be done.
Yeah, I would add to that. I would totally support that. The Trust for Public Land is working across the country, and one of our goals is to have every urban American live within a 10-minute walk of a park or playground. That won't happen through private action. It has to be government, mayors, city councils taking the leadership. But the beauty of a conservancy is that they stay around while power changes. Administrations change, budgets change, priorities change. And the beauty of conservancies, particularly conservancies that might represent a whole collection of parks, is that they help keep government's feet to the fire. They help keep pressing the message that parks are first-tier solutions to urban problems with public health, with environmental problems, ecological problems, and economic problems.
And it's so interesting to see, and we're going to run out of time soon, but the callers coming from all over the city and all over our area, either with stories of trying to create these kinds of alliances in their areas, like we just heard from Steve in Hastings-on-Hudson, or wanting them, like the caller we had from Southeast Queens, somebody else calling from Bayside and saying they need stuff like this in the parks in that part of Queens, somebody else with respect to Block Island. So I think you can see here, Adrian Benepe, that there's a great demand.
Well, they can download our report for free at our website. It's thetrustforpublicland.org, and our report on conservancies can be downloaded as a PDF.
Let me get a Brooklyn call in here. Betty, you're on WNYC. Hello, Betty.
Hey, I just wanted to call in about public funding versus private funding. And the Brooklyn Ridge Park and the Brooklyn Ridge Park Corp is now undergoing scrutiny because the design plans that had taken 20 years to be crafted is now being executed in a way that's taking an iconic view of the Brooklyn Bridge from the community and the people who travel long and far to come to Brooklyn Heights to see the bridge. And there are grassroots organizations like Save the View Now that was started by Stephen Guterman. He's been on television and in the newspaper trying to get the Brooklyn Bridge Park Corp to come clean with some of the decisions that they've made on the buildings of the Toll Brothers that's gone up on Pier 1.
Tupper Thomas, it's not your park, but now that you're with the larger umbrella group and, you know, Prospect Park not that far from there, any thoughts about that? I know people love the Brooklyn Bridge Park. People who live around there adore the park. But here's a question of some of the private buildings that maybe are providing some of the private funds for the park.
Absolutely. The concept behind the Brooklyn Bridge Park is one that we all are quite excited about, which is that the park can actually be maintained totally as a brand new park. You can get a brand new park, a gorgeous park, and it can be paid for by the housing that was put on the other land, the land that was not designated for park.
But that's where the tension comes
right.
in, right? If it's all
exactly.
private funds without the accountability that public funds would have.
Well, it does have the accountability because the company, the Brooklyn Heights Corporation, the Brooklyn Bridge Park Corporation, is very much made up of government people. They are government appointed. The parks commissioner, the mayor is very much part of the whole decision-making process at Brooklyn Bridge Park. So there's a lot of different issues about this particular site and where is the vision line and where isn't it. And so there's measurements going on now, and everybody is looking back to see if this is really what was approved by everybody. It's a little bit of a complicated topic, but I would say that on the whole, the Brooklyn Bridge Park is an amazing success, and it's very much a public park. And it works beautifully if you go on your bicycle, which you probably have. It is a wonderful place to go. It is so much more popular than even those of us who worked on it many years ago thought it would be, that I'm hopeful that this does not get in the way of that beautiful park being able to work well.
Should there be different expectations, Adrian, when the park is created by private money, like even the High Line or the Hudson River Pier Park or Brooklyn Bridge Park?
Yeah, I think that the primary expectation should be that it's a public park and under the authority of public entities, the mayor, the parks commission, whatever it is. I think that's rule number one. You know, if you get a slightly higher or get a higher level of maintenance in that park because of the private funding, you know, that's also not a bad thing because that allows the city to move its scarcer dollars to parks that don't have private support. So I think the argument that private money is somehow bad for parks is disingenuous because it just creates extra money for parks. And in New York City, that's about $150 million extra every year.
Yeah. I think the trick is to make sure that the public side steps up. That during the bad days when conservancies were first formed in New York, you know, it was saving treasures. It was private individuals stepping in with their wealth to rescue parks that otherwise would have continued to deteriorate. And that's what you see happening in other cities in the country that today are in the kind of fiscal distress that New York was in the 80s. The difference is today New York is not in that situation. We have recovered and then some. We are one of the wealthiest cities on the planet, so we can afford publicly to do for all our parks what conservancies have done for the gems of the system.
We thank Joan Byron, who is just speaking, Director of Policy at the Pratt Center for Community Development, the former chair of the Bronx River Alliance, Adrian Benepe, former New York City Parks Commissioner, now Senior Vice President and Director of the City Park of City Park Development at the Trust for Public Land, and Tupper Thomas, now Executive Director of New Yorkers for Parks and founding President of the Prospect Park Alliance. The Trust for Public Land report just out, Public Spaces, Private Money, the Triumphs and Pitfalls of Urban Park Conservancies. Thank you so much, all of you, for discussing these with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And who do you find in parks besides people? Dogs. Our next guest used to be a New York City dog walker, and now has written a book called A Matter of Breeding, which you might call A Biting History of Pedigree Dogs. Stay with us.